welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Franz Stein, who is calling in from Australia at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's real dedication. He is the author of The Inner Heart of Reiki, Rediscovering Your True Self. Welcome, Franz. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and thanks for inviting me. Exciting.
Yes. Well, tell the audience a little bit about how you got involved with Reiki. You've been, you're the co-founder of the International House of Reiki, and is it the Shumbaya International Reiki Association, is that right?
Shibumi, but it's a Japanese Shibumi. Word. It's
okay,
tricky to pronounce.
And you have a number of other books, the Reiki Source Book, The Japanese Art of Reiki, A to Z of Reiki Pocketbook, Reiki Techniques Card Deck, and your Reiki Treatment. So that's wonderful. How did you get involved in Reiki?
Well, it's interesting that you asked, actually, because I was not into all of these kind of things at all, like healing. And I'm originally from the Netherlands, and from when I was 16 till about 30, I had a lot of back problems. I had what they call the Schwannoma disease. And so the doctor said, okay, when you get older, it will only get worse and you just have to get physiotherapy and painkillers. And it did indeed. My late 20s, I had a lot of difficulty with it. And so one day I was traveling in India. And I was laying in a bed because I couldn't move. I couldn't pick up my backpack. And I thought, this is just crazy. And I have to do something for myself. And as soon as I started to investigate that, one of the things what came across was Reiki. And it really helped me. And I thought, wow, if I, who was always very skeptical about these things, can help myself and actually feel better, then I would like to help other peoples to do the same.
Yeah, we use Reiki all the time here at the center, especially in recovery, because it really helps. In terms of my personal experience with it is, and maybe you can help me with this, there's two areas where putting energy in is not a good idea, but you could probably use Reiki to take energy out, and that would be burns and nausea. So, you know, people get nauseated after surgery, and if I'm doing energy work on their surgical site, which is usually their breast, and that can exacerbate their nausea because, you know, too much energy in the solar plexus area makes them throw up. So you don't want to make people throw up.
That's true.
Burns. I treat a lot of burns. I was at the Brook Army Burn Unit in the military, and you can't just put energy on a burn because it'll start to hurt like heck, you know, it'll be really, really painful. But everything else I think responds to Reiki. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a wonderful practice. And I was just actually, while I was waiting for the interview, I was just reading a paper what's been published by Penn Medicine for the Penn Hospital, and where they, and the title is Reiki, a light touch that helps cancer patients. And, you know, I think it's so wonderful to see, you know, that this kind of practice is being practiced more and more by doctors. And I think it's a really great combination of modern healing, like operations, whatever we do, with ancient techniques of hands-on healing, and really fusing those together to benefit clients or patients.
Yeah, I want to tell you, though, that there is a warning, and I've talked to other masters about this, and it really is true, that when you're healing a cancer patient, if you have any predilection toward that cancer, you have to be very, very careful during energy work, and I'll tell you why. Cancer is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, and if you have a vibration similar to it, the energy can come into you. I had a friend who was a Reiki master, and she went home to help her mother who had metastatic cancer, and I know she did a lot of healing on her, of course she would, But then she came down suddenly with stage 4 cancer in herself. And the only reason she got it was through the energetics. So, you know, I want to, and I did confirm this with a master who understood how this happened. So if you, I mean, I'm not telling people not to do Reiki on cancer patients, just not to do it. I'll give you an example. I smoked for 20 years, and I was at high risk for lung cancer because my family was at high risk. You know, a lot of people in my family got lung cancer from smoking. And I was always spiritually guided never to do healing on lung cancer patients. And I see a lot of cancer here, so I saw a lot of lung cancer. I do healing on all sorts of other cancers. But then I was interviewing a master on this radio show, and I asked him about it, and he said, no, you don't want to do that if you've got the, you know, like the vibration where it would come into you. And that's because cancer is a fourth dimensional intrusion in the third dimension, and it can come through to you if you're a healer when you merge your energy fields if you don't practice enough protection. So that's a warning, because I've seen it happen. And it's,
yeah,
you know, it's not good.
I see it a bit slightly different, but, you know, we all look at things quite differently. My father had cancer and died from lung cancer, and I did lots of healing for him, what was perfect.
Well,
and
you may not have had the predilection, though, you see.
You know,
you can't do healing. It's that if you get warned about it, you should pay attention. You know, if you hear not to do the healing, you should pay attention.
I think it's with anything, you know, and I think this is why it's so important. Traditionally, actually, the system of Reiki in Japan, where it traditionally came from, it was very much a self-practice. So you would practice for yourself, like deep meditations, hands-on healing, chanting of the symbols and the mantras. And through that, you became a really clear, strong, stable vehicle to support other people. And I think that sometimes is now overlooked. You know, we quickly do a class. Nowadays, there is Reiki 1, 2, and 3 available on the internet, and then people are not stable or good in their own being. So therefore, when they start to do healing on other people, they have all sorts of concepts behind it. And so therefore, for me, really, Reiki 1 is really a self-practice, what helps you to create a really solid foundation. And so that, you mean, it's like probably a doctor. I mean, if I suddenly start to operate, then I would make a mess of it. I probably would faint from all the blood, you know, and all these things. And I would probably vomit. But I have to prepare myself, you know. And when I prepare myself as a doctor or as an energy healer, then we are in a much better space. So for me, I think, you know, sometimes we might even say people who do Reiki 1, we might even say to them, you know, it's not really time for you to do hands-on healing on someone. First work on yourself, maybe 6 months or a year or 5 years before they really have that solid foundation, before they can really say, okay, now I'm a clear vehicle. I don't let my ego and the I and all the other things in the way. Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that energy work is something that you have to do with caution if you're not prepared. I mean, I agree. The stuff that's in the inner heart of Reiki is really good preparation for anybody doing energy work of any kind. I think that these steps are very important, because if you have any, I guess what I was describing in myself was a weakness in the lungs due to chemical toxicity from, you know, not treating my body like a temple, right? So that weakness is a potential problem when I merge energy fields with other people. So I would have to heal that in myself, and I really didn't. I mean, I was working too hard. I wasn't eating right. I was not sleeping. And I actually broke my arm, and the spiritual information I got from the clairvoyant that was replacing Sylvia Brown, so she was pretty world famous, was that I broke my arm so I wouldn't get lung cancer. So obviously I was not taking care of myself. So I was covering six emergency rooms and working like crazy. But when I broke my arm, I took care of myself for 4 months because, of course, I couldn't work or operate. So then I didn't get cancer. But you see, the idea here is that when you start to do energy work, there's a lot that you need to do on yourself before you go out with others. And that's what this book is all about. Would you like to explain some of the practices that are recommended for all the people beginning in Reiki?
Yeah, one of the main elements of the system of Reiki for a beginner, and I think also for an existing practitioner or teacher, is to do a practice what is called Joshin Kokyoho in Japanese. And if you really look at it, it's centering ourselves, so breathing in a wonderful bright light to the hara, what is an energy center just below your navel, and really centering it that. And if I would stand up, you could see that that particular spot is the center of my body. And when we feel more centered, therefore also we feel more grounded, and therefore we have less issues by doing hands-on healing on other people. And, you know, generally in life as well. When I teach, I travel with a Weeble Wobble. Do you remember those Weeble Wobbles? Weebles wobbles, but they don't fall. And I always put them on a table, and I say to the students, I said, okay, look at this Weeble Wobble. It moves, and it's free, but it doesn't fall. And I say, okay, why doesn't it fall over? And they say, okay, because the weight is at the bottom. And this is so important in our life because we're so in our headspace in this modern day of age, computers, phones, technology, intellectualizing everything, that we forget to really connect to that earth energy, that groundedness. And then when something happens, we fall over and we kind of keep laying down. 1 day, 2 weeks, we might stay angry or worried for a month or 2 months or however long. But if we like that Weeble Wobble and that groundedness, that energy is more at the bottom of our body, then we can bounce back much faster. And so that is a really important element what I focus a lot on in our classes.
Yeah, I can see without that grounding, there are energetic problems with doing energy work, you know, in terms of taking on energy that and not being able to release it. And then also, not being, I guess, energetically centered. So that's very, very important, right? So what are some of the other, founding principles of Reiki?
Well, one of the most important elements is the precepts, and it's taught in all Reiki branches. And the precepts are very simple on a piece of paper, but very hard to implement sometimes in our daily life. And they are do not anger, do not worry, be grateful, practice diligently, and show compassion to yourself and others. And in a way, really, that is not just during hands-on healing. The word precepts also means instructions. So really the precepts are telling us how to perform hands-on healing, what means performing hands-on healing without any anger, without any worry, being grateful for any kind of thing, what happens during it, and that we have to practice diligently beforehand so that we can do hands-on healing and doing it in a compassionate way. But ultimately, that is really about life, isn't it? You know, and so for me, the system of Reiki is hands-on healing, but it's at the same time, it's also a way of life. That when we in a cafe, or when we talk to a colleague, or a partner, or someone we meet on the street, that we can approach them from that space of no anger, no worry, that we're being grateful, that we're being compassionate. Yeah.
I want to give the listening audience an example of how interesting this energy is. I was doing hands-on healing on a patient who had a bunch of health problems. She was chronically ill with a bunch of stuff. And she asked me, what would the energy do? And I said, well, I really don't know what it will do. And it's going to do whatever it needs to do first. You know, mm-hmm. You don't direct the energy when it comes through you. You don't say, oh, you're going to go to the left foot now. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'm not sure, but, you know, you'll be able to tell me. And she called me the next day, and she said her sister called her, and they had been estranged for over 20 years. So
yeah.
Evidently the relationship healing had begun. And so maybe that was at the root of some of her physical problems. So you never know.
That's it. You never know. And I think that's the wonder about the system of Reiki. You know, it's, I have a similar story. That is a student done Reiki one, and a couple of months later she rings me up and said, oh, she was doing hands-on healing on her grandfather's knee, who had a mm-hmm. problem with his knee, and he only allowed her to touch his knee. And
right.
after a month doing hands-on healing on the knee, he tells to his granddaughter, and he goes, I'm not really sure if this Reiki has worked for my knee, but since you've been doing this, I can hear better.
Right. I've got some patients
you know,
who are
a wonderful
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
I have some patients who can feel energy very well, probably better than I can. And when I do, like I'll be putting energy into an area that's symptomatic, like a wrist injury, right? And they'll feel it going to their tooth. That is giving
yeah.
them trouble. You know, they're having a problem with a tooth infection, but they can feel the energy going all the way up to their tooth. And I just think it's fascinating. I just think the whole thing is really fascinating about how the energy moves through the body. And I think there's probably a lot of spiritual help that occurs during these Reiki sessions that we're not even aware of.
Absolutely. I think when we really in that open interconnectedness space, we can ultimately expect many things to happen. I like it, you know, when you look in Japanese at the word meridian,
uh-huh.
you know, often we think meridian is just a line, but the Japanese word, if you translate it actually, the word meridian, it means a web of energy pathways.
Right.
And I like that because if we look at the web and we touch one threat of a spider web,
mm-hmm.
then the whole web moves.
Right.
And this is why I think it's sometimes we can touch a foot and a person feels it in their tooth, you know, or wherever it goes, because everything
right.
is so
yeah.
interlinked with each other. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I think that also, like we said, it's not just physical. It can be emotional. Mm. It can be relationship. It might even be financial. Who knows? But
yeah.
the energy going in is going to go where it needs to go. And that's
yeah.
not determined by the patient or by the Reiki practitioner. That's determined probably by the higher self of the person getting the healing, you know. I mean, we don't know exactly what is needed, much less how to get it there.
Well, I always say to people, you know, I always say to people, I don't even know what I need sometimes. You know,
right.
I thought I needed a chocolate bar and then I had a headache. So
that's
know.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah,
so how
true.
Do I know what other people need? And, you know, so it's, but I think that's also why to really do that, I think is why it's also so important to work with the meditations and practices
mm-hmm.
and chanting the precepts, for example, in Japanese, so that we can let go of the ego, you know, and
yeah, the ego is that part of you that says to the person, I can heal you, you know, that, and that's not what happens at all. You know, you cannot have
yeah.
any expectation when you go to do energy healing. I don't tell people that I can heal their sinus infection or I can heal their headache or I can heal anything, you know, because it's
yeah.
not me, number one. Number two, I have to ask them what happens. I'm not going to predict what happens because I personally don't know what's going to happen. Like you said, we never do. And, you know, a lot of times the information that's coming in during the healing is really remarkable. I mean, it's really, it's not stuff I know, but then when I say stuff, it's stuff that they need to hear, you know. It's like
yeah.
the information will be really, it'll jar somebody. In fact, one time I was doing a healing on a cancer patient, and he had kidney cancer. And I asked, like, who's Adele? I mean, that's what I heard. Who's Adele? And he said, he accused me of hiring a detective to follow him. I said, honey, I don't have time to do anything. I don't even have time to eat three meals a day. How do I have time to hire a detective to follow you? But it turned out that Adele was the person who he cheated on, and he really loved her, but he cheated on her. And that really was the cause of the kidney cancer, relationship screw-ups, you know.
Yeah,
that was interesting. So that was like at the very heart of the matter. And it turned out that because I said that, he called her up, and she came and helped take care of him. And he called me later. He says, I'm going to die of this cancer. But he said, but you were really, really important in getting us back together, and that's the most important thing. Isn't that wild?
That is wonderful. Yeah.
Of course,
yeah,
I didn't do it. I don't know who Adele is. You know, I didn't hire a detective to follow her. That's a great story, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about the system of Reiki. You know, it moves you into very unpredictable things, you know. And I think that's so beautiful about life in a way. And that I think it's also about, you know, when we look at the precepts, do not anger and worry is really, for me, it says, being in the flow. I was just speaking at a Reiki conference in New Zealand, and the title of the conference was "Being in the Flow," and that for me is being in the flow of life. You know, not just the flow of when you do hands-on healing, but in the flow of life, that life gets a little bit better. And you probably see that a lot. You know, when you do surgeries and you have patients.
We had a whole church praying for a patient on Thursday, and you could feel the difference in the energy in the OR. The energy in the OR is very good anyway, but you could feel things, you know, much at a higher level. So when people pray, energetic changes occur.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I can feel it because I can feel energy. But even if you can't feel it, it's still happening.
Yeah.
So prayer, meditation, any spiritual practice at all is going to help raise the energy. And cancer is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, into an organ of low energy. So, you know, when a whole bunch of people pray for someone with cancer, sometimes the cancer goes away. I had a patient when I was an intern. He had a sarcoma. He had a sarcoma in his chest, and it had been cut out, but then it recurred in his abdomen. It was a big grapefruit-sized tumor, and we cut him open to take it out, and we couldn't find it. And yet a CAT scan 2 days earlier showed it was there, and we knew it was his CAT scan because we could see the bright lights from the staples. You know, there's kind of like a flash of light on the CAT scan from staples in his chest that, you know, that kind, you know, it couldn't have been anybody else. It couldn't be a wrong CAT scan. So just in the matter of 2 days, a whole bunch of people praying for him led to a tumor disappearing that was the size of a grapefruit. Now, that means it is a fourth dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, because if it was only a third dimensional phenomena, that could not happen. You see, a fifth dimensional energy, which is prayer, can force the energy, a fourth dimensional energy, out of the third back into the fourth and magically make a big tumor disappear in minutes.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
explains spontaneous remission. That's what it is.
It is. It's such a, and I think this is why, you know, for no matter if we, you know, I always say actually in a way, healing, Reiki, prayer, meditation, whatever we do is kind of preparation, you know, like that we prepare ourselves for when shit hits the fan, for when we do get sick. And because then we prepared, you know, and we all will die one day. So we can't go around it. And I think it's such an important thing that we do these things for ourselves on a daily basis, and therefore at the same time supporting families or friends, or as you say, you know, praying in a church for someone who's in a hospital. I think it's such a wonderful community spirit. So
and it really does help. There's a bunch of scientific studies showing that prayer, which is non-directed, just, you know, it's not so important to pray for a specific thing. It's more important just to send energy like we do in Reiki, but mentally, like prayer is mentally sending positive energy. and then let spirit do with the energy what it needs to be done. I know one time I did a healing late at night on a patient. It's like an 85-year-old that fell down the stairs and had some facial lacerations and a neck injury, and I was guided to do this healing on him like at 2 a.m, you know, and I really couldn't do too much for him. I mean, I did some of the laceration repair, but I couldn't do the facial fractures because he had a broken neck. And as I walked out of the hospital, I heard the energy you just gave him will help him through transition. And there was no indication he was going to die. I mean, nothing. He was fine. You know, there was nothing. His vital signs were fine. And then the next morning when I came in, he had died during the night. So evidently it was time to go. But that energy, you know, I just was guided to do the healing, so I did the healing. But then that energy helped him go through transition.
That's it. And I think this is also why now Reiki is very popular in hospices or where people are passing away.
It really does help. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think I started with my father when he passed away. And it was just such a wonderful thing because he was always quite a little bit uptight, specifically at the end of his life. And he was laying in a hospital bed at home. He was on oxygen and morphine. And actually he was scheduled, because in Holland you can do euthanasia, because he had a very long process of suffering. And my mom was really against it. But so I did lots of Reiki for him. And the day before the euthanasia, he kind of slipped into a coma. And then about 6 hours later, he woke up and he says, "I'm ready. Just give me a little push and I can go." And, you know, for my father to say something like that, it was highly unusual. And for me, that was really something.
Which is really important.
Yeah.
You don't want to die kicking and screaming, you know. That's not
good. I know, absolutely. And I think if you can support that already in loved ones or in strangers, doesn't matter, at a hospice or anywhere, then that is a beautiful thing. Yeah.
And I want to remind the listening audience that death is supposed to be a conscious process that is supposed to be really pretty wondrous and full of joy and really an amazing thing. It's being born that's so hard, you know, being in the womb, being all, you know, comfortable and everything, and then having to go through the birth canal is really the traumatic thing. Dying is supposed to be a lot easier.
That's a good way of seeing it.
There. So if you manage to survive your birth, you know, your death should be a lot easier, hopefully. Conscious dying, though, I think a lot more information will come out on that. I think in the future we'll have much more. I mean, not that there are problems with euthanasia, mainly ethical problems, like the family members forcing somebody into that situation before they want to go, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely some ethical issues that need to be straightened out. You know, and if everybody's ethical, I think it's a great idea. But if they're not ethical, then you can see the problems with it.
Oh, absolutely.
But in any case,
I agree.
Conscious dying would be the thing to really promote so that people could help, you know, like your father did, you know, like really be ready for it and welcoming it.
But I think this is also why practicing hands-on healing and the meditation practices for yourself is that you let go of the fear of death. And so that when your time comes, that you can actually
enjoy it.
Enjoy it and don't hold on to life, you know. And this is what I think what we normally do. We enter the death process with a lot of fear and anxiety, and then death becomes a really big struggle instead of saying, "Yes, this has just been my time. I'm ready.
And it's
I lived in I lived in India for 2 years, and once we were living for a year in Darjeeling, and we did a lot of treatments, Reiki treatments in the tea plantations, and one day there was an earthquake, and the next day they were saying, "Oh, a bigger earthquake is coming along." And so we said, "Well, maybe we have to go." And one of our Tibetan friends there said, "Oh, we tell you a story." It's such a wonderful story. I think the listeners will enjoy this. And it was a story that there's this man, and he went to the market. He was buying something, and suddenly he feels this presence behind him, and he turns around, and there's death. And he gets scared, picks up his groceries, runs home, packs his suitcase, and travels all the way to South India. Anyway, he settles down there, and he's there for a month. And suddenly he hears a knock on the door, and he opens the door, and there's Dad standing. And he looks at Dad, Dad looks at him, and he says to Dad, "Well, I saw you in Darjeeling up in the mountains, and I thought I escaped you." And Dad says, "Yeah, that was funny that I saw you in Darjeeling up in those mountains, because I knew I was going to meet you here."
Right.
And, you know, we can't escape. We can only embrace it. You know, we all go one day. And I go to a drumming class here in the local community, African drumming, with my daughter. And one of the older gentlemen, his son suddenly died in an accident. And the way, of course, he's very sad, but the way he approaches this is just unbelievable to see. And I studied with a Taoist teacher for 12 years until she passed away. And a couple of days before she passed away, I visited her. And when I left, I had some friends calling me because they knew I was very close to her. And they said, "Oh, you must be very sad." And I said, "I'm walking away. She's given me the most amazing teaching." And the most amazing teaching was that she was sitting there. She knew she was going to die. And there was no fear and worry. She embraced it completely. And I thought, wow, if I can practice within the system of Reiki how to help me to go and reach states, then my practice has been beneficial.
Yeah. I mean, conscious dying is something that I think we'll all be doing on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
Because the energy is going to be different here in a few years. It's not going to be so fear based. There's not going to be so much suffering. It's going to be a lot better world to live in.
Yeah.
So I think conscious dying is something that I think we'll be learning about, and really the masters did it. Basically. What I know about it is that you exit through your head consciously. Yeah. You don't exit through the abdomen, which is what usually happens with like a accidental death. But people who exit consciously are, you know, not it's not a traumatic process then.
Absolutely. And I think this is where you come back to those Reiki precepts again, you know, not to worry,
don't
or
worry.
Not to anger.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
There it is. Don't worry.
And let it go, you know, and it's such an important element. Yeah.
So do you want to give a little bit of information about your contact information? You have a website?
Yeah, I teach worldwide. So I'm based in Australia, but I teach on a very regular basis in the U.S., I do classes in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Pennsylvania, Cincinnati. I teach in Europe, what is great. And, of course, I teach in Australia and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And I've got a Facebook page, what is just my name, Franz Stino, or the International House of Reiki. And my website is, of course, the International House of Reiki, what is ihreiki.com, and IH stands for International House, but so we make it short, ihreiki.com. And for me, I still go on a regular basis to Japan to train with my teachers in Japan. And actually, my teachers in Japan are priests, so they are what they call like a Shingon Buddhist priest or a Shugendo priest. And they help me to understand the more underlying elements of what the founder of the system of Reiki, Miku Sui, would have been practicing himself. And I just came back actually in June. I was there for 3 weeks with my teachers, and it was a pretty intense experience. And What was very fascinating, actually, talking about death, because we went high into the mountains where we went to this mountain called Mount Omine, and it's been a spiritual training ground for the last 1,300 years. Mm. And you don't see any tourists there. There is no shops. There's nothing. It's 2,000 meters high on a mountaintop. And actually, they do quite a lot of, between brackets, tests to see how you go with your fear and your worry. And there was one test where you kind of stand unsupported on a little ledge, and they call it the ledge between living and dying. Mm-hmm. And it's really about, and you look really deeply into the valley, and it's really about overcoming that fear of death, because the biggest fear we have, we all have, is the fear of dying. And when we can let go of that, then our fear in our daily life becomes to soften, you know, fear of what people might say to us, or fear that a loved one doesn't love us, or fear that a Reiki treatment doesn't go well, or fear of that I might have a headache, or I don't know what kind of fears we have. And so that was a really interesting experience, to actually experience that for myself. And it was pretty challenging, to tell you the truth.
I'll bet. Yeah, I'll bet. I had an interesting experience similar to that. I had a series of three dreams that were kind of waking dreams. You know, you weren't quite asleep. And the first one, I woke up and there was this energy, this very dark energy, demonic energy, trying to kill me. I mean, really trying to kill me. And I had to go through a series of things, you know, fairly standard stuff to repel it. And then the next night, I had a dream that it was at the bottom of the stairs, but I got it there. I got it before it got in the bedroom. And then the next night, I had a dream it was coming down the street toward the house, but I got it there. In other words, I was handling it further out. And then I was reading a book by Rudolf Steiner, and he described the exact same thing. This is after the three dreams, that initiates have to pass this test, this dream test. He says it's very standard. So they said, oh, my goodness. But, you know, it's interesting. You have to do the test first, and then later on you find out it was a test. So that's overcoming the fear of, you know, what's in horror movies, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which
really is pretty frightening, you know. I mean, it's really frightening, because we all have this fear that something's going to jump on us and kill us, you know. But certainly the fear of the ledge thing is something universal as well. To stand up there and actually overcome your fear is a good, very good spiritual practice.
Yeah, it's a very interesting. And I think, you know, also when we do a lot of spiritual practice for ourselves, or healing for ourselves, or prayer, that we get certain insights in dreams, or, you know, like we can might feel that in our own body and being. And I think, again, it comes back also to that flow, not really restricting anything, and really being in that openness, so that we can be grateful about your experience, for example, what you were saying. It might be scary, but at the same time, we have to be grateful for it, because that brings further insight, you know. And I think sometimes we think also healing is always making something or becoming happier or making it always better, but sometimes it can have some interesting effects, you know. And I always describe it with a shirt. Say if I'm going to wash my shirt, what I've been wearing, and say I've been wearing it for a couple of weeks, hopefully not, but and I'm going to wash it in a bucket, then the water in the bucket becomes a bit dirty.
Right.
And but that makes, actually, that's perfectly good, because that means that the shirt is becoming clean. And sometimes when we start to practice ourselves, because we've been holding all this kind of dirt in our body, that that our energy center, any energy system, is getting a little bit dirty. But we have to celebrate that, you know. We have to celebrate. And I always say, it's better out now than in 10 years' time.
And, you know, there's also a curriculum to this. You know, as we go through the different stages of spiritual development, it's important to understand there is a curriculum. Like you say, overcoming fear, especially the fear of death, that's a big one. or getting falsely accused and not getting too concerned about it. If you want to read about the all the lessons an initiate has, read Kipling's poem, You'll Be a Man, My Son. Because most of the tests that are that we go through are on that poem. It's very interesting. You know, you'll lose everything on a toss of a coin and yet not worry about it because you can just create it all again.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's
so
some wonderful.
So you're never afraid of bankruptcy, or you're never afraid of losing material things because you know, well, no big deal. I'll just create everything again.
Yeah. I just read a book. What is it? Actually, a wonderful novel. I don't read many novels, but it was my birthday and my daughter gave me a novel. So I read it. It was actually really beautiful. And it was about a person who's got dementia. And you don't really know it until almost at the end of the book. But in one state, the author writes down, you can't lose something you don't own. And I thought, wow, isn't that a wonderful sentence? Mm-hmm. Because we think we own our life, but we don't really own our life. Mm-hmm. Or we think we, you know, we own our mobile phone, but it's not really ours, you know. So we cannot worry about it if we lose it in that kind of aspect. And I thought it was a wonderful sentence. And sometimes, you know, we pick up those teachings from wonderful poems or books or teachers out there, or maybe even just walking in nature. You know, we see how maybe a leaf falls from a tree in a free-flowing movement, and we have the idea, oh, that leaf is not really worried or angry about anything. It's just flowing and falling down and becomes compost for the tree again. So it's being recycled. And, you know, all of these things I think are wonderful teachings. We only have to open our eyes to see it.
Yeah, I love what Christ said in the Course in Miracles at the beginning of the book. Nothing real can be threatened, and real has a capital R, and nothing unreal exists. Therein lies the peace of God. We have to remember that we're eternal beings. Nothing can threaten us. We can die 1,000 deaths, and nothing will extinguish us because we have a soul. And basically, you know, there's nothing that you can't recreate. Anything here that you created, by you, I mean not your personality, but you in the expanded sense, you know, at the soul level, you can recreate it again. So nothing can be taken from you.
Yeah, I agree. And I think those are wonderful lessons. But, you know, we can read it and we can hear it. But I think ultimately we have to have that direct experience through any kind of spiritual practice or whatever, meditation, prayer, however we do it, the system of Reiki, so that we can really experience that in our own being and go like, oh, actually, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I had a while ago, my meditation room, and it's got some big windows, and it was winter and it was cold, and I was sitting there early morning doing my practice, had my eyes closed, and I felt the sun coming up, and I could feel it coming on my face because the sun shines in the window in the morning, and I could feel it on my face, and it became warm. And so I sat there, and then I opened my eyes, and it was a bit of a shock because it was still dark outside. And I realized that no matter in what dark times we are, sometimes within ourselves, you know, we might have cancer, we might have an illness, we might have a divorce, we might have, I don't know, be fired from our job, that inner light is always there. You know, the light of your soul, of your spirit, whatever we might call it, is always there. We just have to recognize it. You know, we have to access that again to say, oh, there is my light.
Yeah, and I would go a little bit further with that idea and say that if you experience some horrible tragedy, you know, the one that comes to mind is the loss of a child, you know, which is probably one of the biggest tragedies that someone can undergo.
Yeah,
you have to realize that that was set up kind of like a play or a scenario for your learning, for your spiritual development. It wasn't set there to punish you or to, you know, to put you down. it was set there so that you could learn from it. And, you know, perhaps learn that there is no such thing as death, that your child is perfectly fine and you'll be reunited again. So there's really no reason to go into severe depression about that. You know, we have to actually go through it. Like you say, reading about it isn't enough. Having a friend that goes through it isn't enough. You actually have to do it yourself. So there's many, many lessons that we come here to learn. We set them up when we're in spirit. When at the soul level, we decide what lessons we're going to do. And some people decide to do a whole bunch of lessons at once. That's why you shouldn't be judgmental when somebody has an alcohol problem and a relationship problem and a, you know, cancer. And we can't be judgmental because we don't know the circumstances through which they may actually be doing three times as much spiritual work as we're doing.
That's true.
And yet we're sitting there judging them, you know.
Absolutely.
They must be this or that. But, you know, really you don't know. You don't know at all, so that's why you suspend judgment.
I think, you know, it's also really important. I where I teach in Australia, I have a fireplace, and we have like wooden meditation benches. And I said, we cannot really destroy this bench. And I said, we could throw it in a fire and then it might looks like that we've destroyed it and it's gone, but actually has transformed. It transformed into ash and heat and, you know, and it's the same when we die. We transform. And when we see death as a transformation and not an end, then we can overcome these fears and worries and griefs, as you say. It becomes much easier. Yeah.
Well, remember, spirit did not call that man's death death. It said the energy you gave him will be used in transition.
Yeah.
Not extinction, you see.
That's it. Yeah, it's a transition period.
It's a transition. He became, well, in spirit, we have so much lack of limitation compared to what we have here. So it's really something that, you know, I think Jesus said we should rejoice when we die, but mourn when we're born.
So,
you know.
I agree.
That tells it all. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Is there anything you'd like to tell our listening audience?
Well, you know, for me, really, again, the most important thing is that really, for me, Reiki, ultimately, if we translate it, means spiritual energy. And it's really your inner light, your inner spiritual energy, and what is always shining bright. And no matter if we have layers of fears and worry and anger, like lampshades over it, if we practice, we can peel away those lampshades and that light. We can rediscover it again, and then we can shine. And I think that is a very important element to remember.
And most people can, you know, find Reiki trainings. It's a very, it's a worldwide system that's very, I think it's reasonably priced, and it's reasonably, it's a very good system. There hadn't been a lot of corruption in it like some of the other systems out there. So it's a very good system to go into in order to study these principles and then practice them.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a system of instruction that's very good.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what really appealed to me when I've been doing this professionally now for 20 years. And it's been an absolutely amazing journey. And I can see it when I teach all over the world how people benefit from it in all sorts of different ways. And so, and as you say, there's lots of Reiki teachers out there in your community. So, seek them out, and absolutely.
Or seek them out if you need healing, you know.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to be a student, if you're undergoing surgery or have a health challenge, experience it as a patient, you know, as a client. That's
absolutely
a good thing to do, too.
I mean,
I
still go for Reiki treatments myself sometimes, because sometimes, you know, it's nice to lay down on a table and someone puts their hands on you for healing. I mean, you know, we all need sometimes someone to look after us. So
absolutely.
I think that's another important thing.
Yeah, I think people are, I know people are sent to me when I really need it. They just show up and offer to do Reiki on me, and I'm always very grateful. You know, it's like, wow, how did that happen? You know, but I guess when you help people all the time, that when you need help, even if you don't know you need help, you get help. How's that?
That's it. It will come your way no matter what.
That's right. Even if you don't ask for it. So that's being in the flow. That's the other thing. You keep talking about being in the flow. If you really are energetically in ebb and flow with all that is, then what you need will come to you, and what you don't need will be taken away. And you won't even have to participate so much. I mean, you know, you can pray, you can meditate, but you don't really have to direct everything yourself at a conscious level.
And then we lose that struggle, right? We can be just flowing freely through life. Yeah.
Right. It's more like a dance than an uphill trek.
I often say to people, and I wrote an article not so long ago, dancing in the universe or with the universe. I can't remember. I think it's dancing with the universe. And I see often also doing treatments on other people is dancing with the other person, you know. And
it is.
Yeah, being in that flow, very important.
Yeah, I want to end the interview with something that we're all really familiar with, but we don't think about. It's a little ditty called "Row, Row, Row Your Boat."
If
you listen to it, it's "Row, Row, Row Your Boat Gently Down the Stream, Not Up." Right?
That's
merrily,
true.
Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. It really says a lot, doesn't it?
It does.
It does. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful interviewing you, Franz. It's a delight. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day, and talk to you next time. Thank you.
All righty. We've been interviewing Franz Stein, the Inner Heart of Reiki. Please join us next week, where we're going to be interviewing Dr. Brenner on whole body dentistry. Find out what you need to know about your teeth to stay healthy. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.